It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 20th day of June, 2023. Happy West Virginia Day, everybody. It's our birthday today. It is the 160th birthday of the Mountain State, almost heaven. And, well, we dream of better days to come. But this is always a special day. Terribly fond of it, coming as it does so close to the solstice. Yesterday was the 11th anniversary of the introduction of the AIC Act in the Congress of the United States, the first and only bill to ever have the power to end mountaintop removal, which is pretty fantastic, and we continue to work on that bill because, well, it's the single most important key Appalachia's future. Hi, I'm Robin. If you happen to pop by the headon.live, if you happen to pop by the chat room, you can be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that it is each and every program when the program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between the Great Globe Round. I am your only moderator, which means basically you don't have a moderator right now. But if you do pop by, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky and New Jersey Nick and Irish Dave and Anatole. Hey, gang. Good to see you. Good to see you. And, well, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, except for yesterday, which ended with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so as a consequence, we say thank you. Profound thank yous to our buddy Reverbo. Thank you, Reverbo. And thank you to Vincent. Thank you to Dr. John in New Mexico. Thank you to Armand. Thank you so much to Ralphs. Thanks as well to Jessica. Based on her note yesterday, thank you to Ralphs. Make sure I didn't miss anybody. Oh, we're all clean. We're all cleared up. So, where does that leave us in terms of trying to keep this little online experiment in conversation and goodwill? The fundraising hole is at $1,550. Ouch. It would be great if we could knock some of that down. And kind of not be facing such a horrifying hole going into July. I mean, there's only 10 days left of June, and two of those days will be weekends. So basically, 9 days of broadcasting left in the month of June with a pretty deep hole. Hopefully we can, because that's five unfunded days. That's today, yesterday, Friday, Thursday, Tuesday. Yeah, it's a mess. But to get us started, a couple of notes. It is, of course, Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday is the day of the week where we take note of Titanic manifestations of white wing and maggot intellect. We've got examples of that left over from Moran Monday, so we'll get after that fairly shortly. And we've got, it's not every Titanic Tuesday that comes along that you've actually got a Titanic story. But this one's a doozy. I usually don't even do stories like the Titanic tourism sub thing. But we'll take a run at that in a little bit because I think it's worth talking about. And of course, well, Hunter Biden. You know, I dispense with the song ban for the Hunter Biden anthem because, well, singing is deadly to fundraising on this program. But Scott in San Diego and I workshop these lyrics, and it's more than about singing. It's a manifestation of just how stupid this whole thing is. Hunter Biden, living gauzy over time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're all fit to lose our mind. And it's about the only thing Nitwit Nero can talk about today, and we'll get to that. But with regard to Hunter Biden, I had a note from Billable Rick of Counsel Emeritus to the Horn. Not really. I mean, I don't think there's no attorney-client relationship or anything, but he is our legal advisor. I mean, if fat, dead Rush Limbaugh could have one. My friends, my counsel, F. Lee Levin. That was actually Mark Levin back in the day. Well, we got Billable Rick, and I'd rather have Billable Rick. Hunter Biden tax charges and Nitwit Nero's trial date of August 14th, 2023. I just saw this headline in the legal news. Hunter Biden will plead guilty to two counts of willful failure to pay about $100,000 of income tax in violation of 26 U.S.C. Section 7203, which is much less serious than filing a false or fraudulent tax return, 26 U.S.C. Section 7206, paren 1, close paren. The latter charges carry a three-year statutory maximum term in prison, 1 year of supervised release, and a fine of $100,000, whereas the former charge carries a maximum sentence of 1 year in prison and a $25,000 fine. In exchange for his plea to the tax charges, the government will divert the felony charges of lying about illegal drug usage on his federal firearm application. Thus, Hunter will likely face no prison time for his plea to the tax and firearm charges. It obviously pays in spades to have good lawyers. Based on this sweetheart deal, I suspect that the government's tax case against Hunter was full of holes that Mack Trucks could have easily navigated. I can't wait to hear what Nitwit Nero has to say about Hunter's plea deal on his toy platform, Untruth Antisocial. I'm also looking forward to seeing and hearing the heads of other right-wing Pauls and commentators and pundits and panjandrums explode in response to this news. Also, I see that U.S. District Judge Aileen M. Maggot Cannon has set Nitwit Nero's trial date for August 14, 2023. That trial date appears to have been set to meet the Speedy Trial Act deadline of the trial needing to commence 75 days within the date of the arraignment. However, that trial date will likely be continued for at least several months because Trump's attorneys will require more time to prepare for trial. So in my humble opinion, that trial date is simply a holding date. Well, thank you for that, Billable. I appreciate that. And there's more to go into relative to the gun charges here, such that for as much as the right wing wanted Hunter Biden busted, what they really didn't want was Hunter Biden busted for being coked up and having a gun. So we'll get to that. We will. But I also have a dispatch from Joey. May Turdy. Yesterday, Robin stated that she, believed that Negro Leagues Baseball Hall of Fame in Kansas City should not change the name to African American Baseball Hall of Fame. Here comes Junior. Yeah, but Robin is a Reds fan, and the Cincinnati Reds are in the National League. Giraffe completes the thought.
So, Junior, you're suggesting, since Robin is a fan of the National League team, that she would not object if they changed the name of African National League Baseball Hall of Fame?
We have been playing baseball in Australia since the 1850s, and we would always take on all comers, no matter their race, says Joey Two, the kangaroo. It's not called race ball, but rather baseball. Furthermore, many Australians referred to baseball as cricket, even though we later played actual baseball. Many people received in the States attempted to introduce African American as early as the 1920s, but of course all those benevolent people received her an answer was crickets.
Oh, thank you, Joey Two. As an African-American giraffe, this subject is near and dear to my heart.
On last night's show, Robin brought up Ron DeSantis' white boots.
I wanted to bring up the fact that nearly 1.5 million people have been eliminated from Medicaid in the past couple of months, and some states have moved very swiftly to kick people off Medicaid, generally just to be cruel. Guess which states?
I don't know for sure, but I'll bet Florida does one of them.
Oh, good job, Junior. Yes, Ron DeSantis leads the way in Florida, as that state has dropped several hundred thousand people in the last few months. And, of course, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Jethreen Bodine, is second for most people. Dropped off the Medicaid roll since the end of coronavirus was declared. Yes, Ron DeSantis, where the D in his name stands for defund, defraud, and deny, does not wear those boots to make a fashion statement. Rather, Ron wears those boots to make a fascist statement.
Okay, that's quality. Where's my damn bell? Honest, who keeps moving my bell? I'm going to have a conniption. Why is this so damn hard? This is crazy making. I know I didn't move it.
Cowbell. According to Florida officials, the coverage can be restored retroactively if they submit information demonstrating they're still eligible for Medicaid.
Yeah, so they can be thrown in jail just like the voters were when their voting rights were restored. Fuck you, Florida. DeSantis, I hope your whole state desinks into the ocean except where Scary Jerry lives. Oh. Thank you, Annette. Junior says thank you.
You're welcome, Junior.
So there's the cowbell for a fascist statement. And then there's some morgue confusion that Giraffery wants to address.
I'd like to clear up the confusion at the Harvard morgue that has recently taken place. Have you ever heard the term, some people are so smart they can't see the forest for the trees? Well, the man at the morgue is being charged with harvesting Harvard body parts at the morgue and selling them. Well, that's just an honest mistake, as all the man really wanted to do was help Ukraine in the war against Russia. The morgue man never actually sold anything. What happened was, in sincere efforts to aid Ukraine, the Harvard morgue man simply sent, not sold, but rather he sent arms to Ukraine to help with the war effort.
Oh, Giraffery. Junior.
I heard the guy was selling brains to the Ukrainians. You could say he was selling craniums to the Ukrainians.
One of these days I'm going to have a long talk with those boys.
I've heard of selling your soul, but it sounds like this guy sold several brains, including his own, to some really dumb people.
Who's brained Abby? Abby who?
Normal?
Abby normal?
Never mind.
I would like to call bullshit on anybody that thinks Merrick Garland is being deliberate and calculating in regard to not bringing charges against Donald Trump much sooner than he has. Garland is a gutless coward, and for people to suggest that he was crossing all of his I's and dotting his T's is a crock of crap.
Daddy, I think you mean dotting his I's and crossing his T's.
Why, Junior, forget crossing his I's. The guy has had his eyes shut for the last 2+ years. Hell, Merrick has been Merrick the Meek. Many thought he was in a coma. It was wonder that the Harvard morgue man did not come along to try to harvest Garland's brain, since it appeared he was comatose for the last few years. There was entirely too much evidence available far sooner than this spring for charges not to be brought sooner. Charges have brought more charges against more people later. Is there another thing called et al? Considering the fact that Trump's lawyers were going to cause all kind of delays, Time should and could have been allotted for the delays, and hopefully this or these court cases would have been over by the election of 2024. Oh, Giraffe is in giraffe fury. Then this person on the porch wants to take a shot at the great Elie Mystal, of whom is the known around the Harvard yard as Et al. Alley, the Harvard grad and Harvard law grad, is brilliant in his analysis of most everything. On this day back in 2014, sometimes it's hard transitioning away from the giraffe voice. On this day back in 2014, the Obama administration granted an array of new benefits to same-sex couples, including those living in states where gay marriage was against the law. The new measures ranged from Social Security and veterans benefits to work leave for caring sick spouses. And on May 12, 2016, the Obama administration took another historic step in its aggressive defense of civil rights, sending a letter to schools across the country notifying them that transgender students must be permitted to use bathrooms that align with their gender identity. Way to go, Obama. This has been Joey's Journal for a Titanic Tuesday, the 20th day of June, the last day of spring, with Giraffery listening to Steve in New York deny the summer solstice actually starts tomorrow. Hey, lay off, Steve. $20 contrarian challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Joey. Listen, I think there's middle ground on Merrick Garland. I don't know what the man faced. And as I have grown older, and I hope wiser, I have learned to do a little bit more of that trying to walk in someone else's shoes thing. Save for the fact that when I see obvious fuck-ups, it's... And here's the thing. This is the Merrick Garland thing. Who was the attorney general who preceded... Okay, not the attorney general, but the penultimate Trump attorney general? Yes. Bill Barr to prosecution. Who sabotaged the first investigation of Nitwit Nero. Had a lawyer on his staff who was perfectly willing to take the reins as Attorney General of the United States and overturn a constitutionally mandated and constitutionally accurate election in 2020. And I can't, as I've digested the story about them dragging their heels, and it is not a good look. But one thing neither you nor I know is how many maggot moles were in the Department of Justice by the time that January 20th, 2021 rolled around. There's just some tingling to my spidey sense, and this is not by way of excuse making, but there's some tingling to my spidey sense that says that when one takes on the position of Attorney General, one has to find what the lay of the land is around one. Does this make any sense? It does to me. But maybe not to everybody. Whatever the reason, though, it did take too long, and it may prove to be more costly than we could ever imagine. So that. I told you Nitwit Nero had just been blathering his head off all day about Hunter Biden.
Friend, Crooked Joe's Department of Justice wants to send President Trump to jail for 400 years despite having committed no crime.
So at first he was I Am an Innocent Man. He was doing Billy Joel. Now he's channeling Freddie Mercury. Committed no crime. Oh, the singing is going to be a real downer today.
but the DOJ is clearing up hundreds of years of real criminal liability by giving Hunter Biden the equivalent of a mere traffic ticket.
Hundreds of years?
Friend, if you'd failed to pay $2 million worth of taxes, lied on a federal background check to purchase a gun, possessed illegal drugs, and had corrupt foreign business ties, the Justice Department would lock you up for years. But because Hunter's dad, the big guy, is a Democrat president,
hey, at least he's acknowledging that Joe Biden is the president of the United States. Take your little victories where you can.
Hunter will get away with just a slap on the wrist, but it's not just nepotism. The taxes are on money made in Crooked Joe's name. Joe Biden knows that this clears his own name just as much as his son's. Crooked Joe is weaponizing the Justice Department to clear his corruption in yet another act of election interference. Can I get another Adderall over here? Just a couple of rails. There truly is a two-tier justice system in America, one set of rules for the left and well-connected, and another set of rules for the rest of us.
The rest of us. You'll notice he doesn't say for the rich, because, well, you know.
The Department of Justice is trying to take down President Trump.
You're not president anymore, dipshit.
Because he's the only candidate fighting to end this two-tiered system that treats 99% of the country as second-class citizens.
No, honey, it was your administration that reduced more than half of the citizens of this country to second-class citizens. Do you think he never... Does anybody proofread him?
As a political outsider and fearless warrior, except when it came to actually warrioring, President Trump is the human wrecking ball.
I didn't make that up.
Our nation needs to demolish the rigged and weaponized legal system that is plaguing America. And even while he faces a threat of 400 years in jail, President Trump will never surrender our mission to restore true justice in America. Please, peacefully stand with President Trump as he strives for true justice in America by making a contribution today for 1,500% impact. Contribute $24, contribute $47, contribute $75, contribute $100, contribute $250, contribute other and out. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Where's my swirly straw? Where's my bottle of Mexican gasoline? Some days. And by the way, I had a lovely note from Peter and Libby in New York. Dear Miss Robin. Hi, Peter. Hi, Libby. We get near daily emails from the Abolish the Electoral College movement, and those emails have included pictures, quotes, and endorsements from the likes of Adam Schiff, Jamie Raskin, Robert Reich, and other such heavy hitters. Yet we don't recall you ever mentioning this movement even once on your show. And not to belabor the obvious, but since we're only five states away from ridding ourselves functionally of the EC, and can do so without amending the Constitution, this would mean that the thugs would virtually never win the presidency again, given the Browning of America. So will you please use your voice to highlight this issue? It seems like the single most effective thing you could possibly do to safeguard trans rights at the federal level, not to mention a slew of other rights, all in one fell swoop. And we love your Trump imitation.
His Adderall clogged sinuses is the grace note.
And your new Ron DeSantis robot beep boop beep boop 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 imitation had me literally laughing out loud as we listened in bed last night. Yours from New York, Peter and Libby. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Libby. I hope you have a wonderful evening. I've been talking, goodness gracious, I've been talking about the vileness of the Electoral College for probably as long as this program's been on the air. The Abolish the Electoral College movement is, if I understand it correctly, and we have talked about the Interstate Compact movement that would create an interstate compact among states that said
Our electoral votes, we pledge our electoral votes will go for whoever wins the popular vote in our state. Problem is, the Electoral College is still there, and things like, what is it, Moore versus somebody. Is it Moore versus North Carolina? It's due to be decided. I mean, that crazy shit could come down the pike any day now. You know, Thursdays are typically Supreme Court releases opinions day, but they can get a little fluid going as one gets nearer and nearer to their bug out date. That's the case. The Moore case is the case with that advances the truly harebrained and cockamamie notion of the independent state legislature theory. And by theory, I mean harebrained cockamamie notion. I have long said that, and legal scholars agree with me, that the Electoral College is an anachronism from the late 18th century that has its roots entirely in our bloody, racist, enslaving past. And this being Titanic Tuesday and all, we've got a story coming from Josh Hauling Ass later, I hope, that will demonstrate just, you know, where these idiots are when it comes to things like American history, okay? The problem that I have mentioned, and of course, Adam Schiff's a great lawyer. There are other great lawyers out there. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be. All I ever was a simple country lawyer. You know, out there doing entailments in exchange for a bag of hickory nuts. But this court, even though they are scared shitless because of all the scandal, the plague of scandal that Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas has brought, and the, you know, the dishonor and the disdain and the opprobrium that he has brought to the court. I could be entirely wrong. But it feels like they're reaching some decisions, realizing that maybe being a fascist right-wing ideologue isn't quite as much fun as they thought it was going to be. That said, however, I don't trust them as far as I could throw them. I wouldn't trust that six-member majority on the Supreme Court with the carcass of a run-over skunk. And the problem with the interstate compact thing, you know, we have interstate compacts, for instance. These are agreements among the several states. For instance, there's an interstate compact that says, let's take West Virginia and the Buckeye State, for an example. West Virginia has an interstate compact with Ohio. The river may be named Ohio, but I remind you on this West Virginia Day, it's our river. It's ours. It really is. But the point I'm trying to make here is that we've got an interstate compact with Ohio that says, look, if you get busted for DUI and you lose your license in West Virginia, you can't just cross the river and run to the Ohio DMV and say, no, really, I'm living in a van down by the river. You know, West Virginia's river. But I'm living in a van down by it, but I'm in Ohio. So can I please have a West Virginia driver's license? So we have an agreement that, no, we won't do that. We will not do that. And you know what? It's perfectly constitutional. Because there's, you don't have something like, oh,
a constitutional provision expressly describing a process, and in fact you do have a constitutional provision, the full faith and credit clause, which, by the way, has nothing to do with the public debt. Stephen New York's absolutely right about that. But it, what it has to do with is the fact that the several states agree that they will honor the documents and decisions of another state. So, for instance, if I drive across the river to the Buckeye State, they can't pull me over because I don't have Ohio plates and I only have West Virginia plates. Can't do that. On the other hand, what scares me about the Abolish the Electoral College Interstate Compact movement, which, make no mistake, I support. I do support it. But because it goes at the heart of the Electoral College itself, I just have a creepy feeling that our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties might find some way to declare it unconstitutional, some sort of collusion, or I probably shouldn't even say this out loud because some creep from the Alliance Defaming Freedom may find out about it, grifting assholes that they are. So thanks for pointing that out, Peter and Libby. I appreciate it. And this might be the best method that we have. Nonetheless, I think it would be helpful, and we've said this about other things too, if someone in the Congress would simply introduce a bill that was, in fact, a constitutional amendment to do away with the Electoral College. The provisions in this Constitution having to deal with the Electoral College be and are hereby repealed. Some real handy short language, really, because the same sentence could be used with regard to the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment to this Constitution of the United States of America be and is hereby repealed. You know, if you wanted to put some pretty literary flourishes on it, well, sure, why not? Let's do that. The maintenance of a free state no longer requiring frontier people with muskets out there slaughtering indigenous people, the Second Amendment to the Constitution being is hereby repealed. It's worth thinking about. I'm probably overthinking it when you come right down to it. But again, I don't trust them. I do not trust them. And Stephen New York writes in, subject line Garland, I confess that I was not justified in my praise of Garland. However, I suspect that Garland could not hit the ground running, for one. Two, I have a hard time blaming him for being cautious about prosecuting Trump et al., given how much they effed up the department and destroyed any credibility. As a corollary to this, I don't think we will know for decades just how much Trump et al. Gutted the government and planted landmines all over the federal bureaucracy. And see, it's not just Trump. I'm so old. Hi, Bart Cop, wherever you are. I'm so old. I can remember when the loyal Bushies bragged about having planted moles in the federal government that would be sleeper cells until there was some necessity for them to step out into the open. In order to destroy any democratic progress. That was a real thing that actually happened. Yeah, okay, Emilio.
Stop trying to walk in all our shoes, Robin, neo-klepto-cobblerian shill.
That gets a jangle, just for what a mouthful it was. Leah New York said, cowbell for Annette. For finding a cowbell. One down, one to go. One up, one to go. As touching upon the Electoral College way back in July of 2018. Leah New York sent this to me. The problem with the Electoral College is that the lower population states will not vote to adopt an amendment that ends the Electoral College. The problem with Congress reigning in a bad president is that power has to go somewhere. It was deemed appropriate to give a check on the executive branch to the legislative branch. To correct a bug, you must try not to introduce another bug. The programmer's question is, what is the mechanism that fixes this bug without just moving it elsewhere? Lee adds, the high population areas will get attention in a population presidential voting system. Lower population states will not like losing the winner-take-all electoral vote system focus. It takes 38 states to add an amendment to the Constitution, listing by descending population the 38th state is, and here we are, West Virginia. Those notes were written almost 5 years ago. I think the best means of attacking the Electoral College is simply by hammering over and over and over and over again what a racist POS it is. Especially when you combine it with things like maggot states that have been gerrymandered within an inch of the actual voting rights of anyone who isn't white and Christian, and preferably straight. Now back as to the Interstate Compact, Stephen New York says, as I think about this, I find it unpalatable. I understand that the Electoral College sucks. However, that is the system we have. Ponder this. That would effectively allow other states to choose a particular state's electors. In that regard, I don't think there's any doubt that given the fact that the Electoral College is how we do presidential elections and each state gets to choose its electors, that it would be unconstitutional. And frankly, I find that argument legitimate and persuasive. Well, if... Let's play with this for a minute. Let's say Alabama ain't gonna happen. Let's say Alabama signs off on the Electoral College Interstate Compact, and they agree to cast their electoral votes for whomever wins the popular vote countrywide. Does that not... If Alabama goes majority for, say, the maggot candidate, which they will, at least until a couple of more generations start pushing up sunflowers. Wouldn't that disenfranchise all those maggots? I know, it's easy to say, who cares if we disenfranchise maggots? They're almost too dumb to vote anyway. But nuance does enter the room, as the young kids say on the message boards. So there's that. Now, Hunter Biden. Don't take a minute with this. Hunter Biden was facing tax charges, and he was also facing charges for being in possession of a firearm while addicted to drugs. Anytime you buy a firearm, you have to sign a document under penalty of perjury that you are not addicted to illegal drugs. And right now, it's there's a conflict of laws here that's riding just below the surface. Not entirely visible, but it's very much a matter of conflict of laws. Because in order to exercise your Second Amendment right, and purchase a freedom protector, you have to promise in front of God and everybody, and Jesus, and the Constitution, and Santa Claus, that you're not addicted to illegal drugs. And if it turns out you are, you can be busted for a felony. That was what Hunter Biden was facing.
But even a cursory examination of what's going on here yields up what to me is a rather obvious problem. When does an addict know they are an addict? Or, better yet, when someone who has legitimate uses for pain medication, opioids, narcotics, I mean, it was more clear-cut with Hunter Biden because, well, he was apparently snorting the gross national product of Bolivia. But, well, let all who are without sin cast the first Coke spoon. But the hypothetical that I'm working on here does not apply. But the hypothetical is still very much real. Is it illegal to be an addict in this country? Well, it depends on what you're addicted to. I was, for 43 years of my life, a very definite nicotine addict. And looking back on it, I think about all the things that this is just wool gathering, but I think about how I couldn't sit through a meeting without wanting to go out and have a cigarette. Sometimes wanting to go out and have a cigarette was a pretty convenient excuse for really hating the meeting I was in. Never mind. They can get a little snoozy. But let's stay in West Virginia. Let's take a coal miner. He works on a mountaintop removal operation. He's a member of the United Mine Workers of America. And at some point in time, because even with union workers, it's a brutal industry that it cares more about the well-being of its machinery than it does the well-being of the workers. It's what I've described in the past as the raindrop rule. A coal company will worry more about a raindrop falling on a piece of equipment because that raindrop may cause the piece of equipment to begin to rust, and then the next thing you know, it's all rusted out, and you got to buy a new piece of equipment. Whereas, you know, if a human being gets crushed in a slate fall in the mines, you just go out and get another human being. That kind of thinking has led to, you know, well over 100,000 West Virginians dead in 100 years. But with that said, he's a hard-working union man, coal miner, and let's say he ruins his back. You know, working on one of those great, you know, great damn big, huge dump trucks that run all over mountaintop removal sites and have tires that are almost a story and a half tall. And he ruins his back. And he has to have back surgery. And the back surgery is not particularly helpful. And of course the doc gives him pain medication. And because it's the only way he can get through a day, he becomes an addict. Now, opioids are not illegal drugs. But the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and federal law enforcement make it abundantly clear that they consider smoking pot. Oh, using that phrase dates me, doesn't it? I'm sorry. Consuming cannabis or cannabinoids, whatever. You can use weed and run afoul because it's just using. It's not addiction. You can just use weed and run afoul of federal firearms laws. To the point that a couple of years ago, the Democratic Secretary of State, Secretary of Agriculture of the state of Florida, the only statewide elected official who was a Democrat in that state, sued the federal government to get some clarity on this. Now, meanwhile, our West Virginia coal miner, well, his doc cuts him off from his hydrocodone or his OxyContin or whatever. But the pain isn't gone and the pain isn't going anywhere. And so, consequently, he turns to street drugs, and the next thing you know, he's buying heroin and hoping for all he's worth that it's not laced with fentanyl. It's one of those hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first moments. But it's part of what William S. Burroughs in Naked Lunch described as the algebra of need. And the answer is, of course you would. So there's our conundrum. Had Hunter Biden fought the firearms charges, it might have resulted in, lo and behold, the maggots having to come to Hunter Biden's defense. Try to imagine that. It's a real hoot. See, you kind of see where we are with that. And it is something, if we're going to continue to have the Second Amendment, we're going to continue to let people buy guns, the idea that using a non-addictive substance, to wit, cannabis, which is legal in many states, but is still illegal in the eyes of the feds, could get you a felony rap? Pardon me? Funny how the National Ruble Association isn't nearly as interested in that as they are interested in making sure that teachers are packing heat in the classroom. It's just bizarre. Addiction, Matt in San Francisco says, I don't understand how this got to be a law. Why would someone confess to being addicted to an illegal drug? That's like going into the police station and telling them to just follow you and they're sure to make a drug bust. Talk about self-incrimination. And by the way, most addicts can't admit they're addicts until they end up in a room that requires you to say, hi, my name's Matt, and I'm an addict. It just strikes me as a stupid law. It is a stupid law. Born, I'm sure, of the best intentions. And look, think of all the things that people do that probably should be a bar to firearms ownership. Let's try something that's legal. Alcohol. I'm pretty sure that if you're, what's the line from the Jimmy Buffett song? I've been drunk now for over 2 weeks. I passed out in a rally and I sprang a few leaks. Pirate looks at 40. I'm pretty sure that guy doesn't need a gun. Or girl, or non-binary person. But it's probably easier for that drunk to get a gun than it is for that drunk to get treatment for their alcoholism. Tell me how that makes any sense. Anybody. Bueller. Matt's right. It's stupid. But then again, it proceeds from the Second Amendment, which is, well, equally stupid. I mean, it's almost like people in modern America, be they in government or any walk of life, has no real functioning understanding of the history of this country.
The people who wrote the Second Amendment, the people who ratified the Constitution with the Second Amendment in it, some of those dudes, and they were all dudes, I think about their substance consumption in 1787, and I marvel at the fact that they got anything done at all. Even the well-heeled, wealthy ones were knocking down a gallon or two of wine or beer a day. And then there are the ones who were drinking the gallon or two of wine or beer a day and washing it down with a jigger of laudanum, for Christ's sakes. And these are the same people who thought it would be a lovely idea for everybody to have a gun in case it was necessary to go out and slaughter some indigenous people. Because in 1787, the frontier was Western New York, Western Massachusetts. I mean, hell, the place where Cleveland is was actually still a part of New York, the Western Reserve. The people who migrated and populated the Midwest were drunker than Adam's off ox. The famous folktale of Johnny Appleseed, you know, John Chapman, came down West Virginia's river, got off the river at, oh, it's right across from Williamsport, Williamstown, West Virginia. What am I thinking? Marietta. Got off the boat at Marietta and started crossing the country planting apple seedlings. There's a reason why he isn't Johnny Grapeseed. Because the Midwest was populated by white people who were deeply and desperately and hypocritically Christian, who were warned against drinking overmuch wine in their holy book. Well, he didn't say, and there's nothing in there about Eve eating an apple. It was just the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so they found a workaround. Like W.C. Fields said, looking for a loophole. And some of John Chapman, or at least the offspring of some of John Chapman's orchards, exist to this day. And they were sour, sour, brutally sour apples. It didn't matter how much molasses or cane sugar or beet sugar or honey you had, you were not going to sweeten those apples up enough to make a pie. But you could press the juice out of them, put some sweetener to it, and the next thing you know, you got some Jim Dandy cider, and, well, Illinois, Indiana, Western Kentucky, Ohio, Missouri, etc., was colonized by a bunch of violently drunk white people. With guns! It would be fun to see maybe Ketanji Brown Jackson or Elena Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor wax rhapsodic about the bloody alcohol saturated history of this country. In fact, the Prohibition movement comes along because of the brutality to which primarily women and children were subjected by their drunk ass husbands. And that's a fact. Because this country was wasted out of its mind from its inception. Well, it probably is still wasted out of its mind. You see the problem here, right?
And Hunter Biden could have really put a stick in the spokes of the Second Amendment. Because in the aftermath of the Bruin decision last year in New York, in which every law relating to guns has to have a rational relationship to American history and tradition, well, you can see that little regulation just going bye-bye now, can't you? Because the actual history and tradition of the United States of America is for a bunch of drunks to have a shit ton of guns. And I'm not over-exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating this at all. I don't know. Maybe Monkey Up Duclantis would take issue because it's a critical race theory. No, well, I mean, wokeism! It's woke! It's woke to know that the United States of America was drunk off its ass for generation after generation after generation. It's woke, I tell you! Woke! Steve from Georgistan points out, great point, Robin. Before 1914, everything was legal. The first recorded instance of the United States enacting a ban on the domestic distribution of drugs is the Harrison Narcotic Act of 1914. Yes. And, of course, you know, we had the Whiskey Rebellion during the Washington presidency, which was put down forcefully because a bunch of cranks in Pennsylvania, was it? Didn't want their hooch taxed. Truth. Lee in New York points out, addiction. My mother died from smoking at 66, my uncle at 58. On a lighter note, I bought my wife a refrigerator magnet that reads, I could give up chocolate, but I'm not a quitter. Sorry, Lee. Alcoholism wreaked havoc on my family. Both of my grandfathers were alcoholics. And that same sort of thing repeated itself throughout Appalachia. And in a way, that's why Appalachian women are so strong, because they have, for as long as there's been white people here, had to do the hard work of keeping families together while the men folk got shit-faced. Emilio says, well, because after there's a shootout in the home, the alcoholism or drug addiction problem is taken care of. Hashtag conservative solutions. Tookened. Glad to see you're picking up my hillbilly grammar, Emilio. History of alcoholism, centuries, Lee says, of too much alcohol consumption, and today people are protesting dot, dot, dot. Bud Light. Yeah, I know. Stop it, Robin, says Lee. It's reached the point where you saying Hunter Biden starts an earworm for me. Help! Sorry, it's not your fault. Signed, Lee, singing to myself in New York City. I'm so sorry. It's earworming me, too. Hey, I got an idea. Let's blame Scott. I told you it was going to be a Titanic Tuesday. So, there is a $20 challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe and Junior and Joey 2 the Kangaroo. Thank you. To Scott. Hey, Scott, thank you. So, thank you so much. That challenge is met. Scott up in Wisconsin. Thank you, Scott. It means a lot. I did not mean to rhyme like that. But thank you. So we are down to 14.
1480 to close the gap. Thank you so much. Now, like I said, it's not every Titanic Tuesday that we get something Titanic to talk about. And as I said previously, I was inclined to just... I had been inclined to really not even mention this. It's sort of like, well, it's sort of like the coverage that you get when a tornado hits a town somewhere. You get some video journalist parachuting in to the affected town. Most recently, it was a town in Texas. And, well, how are you doing? What was the tornado like? Did it sound like a freight train? It's just... And so we've kind of got the same thing going on with this submersible. And the first thing that entered, that occurred to me when I began paying attention to the story... And this is not to say that I am without sympathy. Is to observe that maybe everything under the sun is not a suitable... not a suitable vehicle for capitalism and tourism. It cost a lot of money to get in that little submersible, and based on what I've read and heard, it had about a 21-inch diameter window in the nose, so if they did get anywhere near the Titanic, which most of the time they don't, the people on the submersible would take turns looking out that tiny little window. And the longer I thought about this, the more gross it seemed. Vulgar. That is a tomb. That is a tomb down there. Now, I'm sure all the people who perished, their remains have long since been consumed, chomped, moved into by some species, maybe an octopus, I don't know. I mean, those waters are deep, but things do live down there. But that doesn't mean that it isn't a tomb. I mean, it's a much different hydrologic location, oceanographic location, but do we do submersible sightseeing tours around the USS Arizona? Or how about some tourism around, oh, I don't know, the Battle of Midway? There were 2,200 people aboard the Titanic. Only 700 survived. So that means that 1,500 dead people down there to one degree or another. Reading all this stuff, hearing all this stuff, I was thinking about a location over in Raleigh County, one county away from me, one county to the south, a community called Eccles. And there was a massive coal mine explosion there one time, back in the 20s. And I think
29 or more miners were forever entombed in that godforsaken hole in the ground. Now, the coal companies went on later and pumped coal mine waste into it. I thought, what a great way to honor those dead coal miners. Yeah, let's pump filth on top of them. But assuming it wasn't full of toxic waste, I wonder if the guy who's running the Titanic Tourism Company, what was it, Ocean Gate? Something like that? Thank you, Ralphs. I wonder if they'd like to branch out into like hiking tours into the Eccles mine shaft to go down there and see what it looks like after a mine's exploded and killed 29 people. I don't think the distinction is that far off. That's not to say that people deserved it at all. But you had to pay a lot of money. And it's my understanding that on this submersible was a really, 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 really rich Pakistani man and his son. There was another guy, an explorer and setter of Guinness World Records rich guy. There were the two pilots. And there was one guy who was like the leading expert on the Titanic in France. About the only guy on there, person on there, who had any business being there. This was solely for purposes of crass commercial capitalism. And eventually, we'll see something similar. I don't know if they're dead or alive. There were supposed to be multiple layers of redundancy to get the thing back up to the surface before the 96 hours of oxygen would run out. I don't know. So far, mm-mm. But eventually, we will have something probably even more catastrophic when, and they were mentioned yesterday, when one or the other of these guys obsessed with dick rockets has one of their rockets, what was the term they used for Leon Scum's rocket? Rapid unplanned disassembly. Well, eventually one of them will rapidly unplanned disassemble with a bunch of tourists on board. I can't see any legitimate reason for this to it. And I know I'm probably coming across as a bitch, but we have search and rescue agencies from Canada, the United States, who knows where else, frantically combing an area of the North Atlantic the size of Connecticut. Hi, Darlene. At massive costs that they can never recoup. Okay, at least I'm not alone. Because Tamara says, I'm trying to say nothing about it because I'm not sad.
Dark tourism is foul, whether it's visiting disaster sites or impoverished places. Not bitchy at all. Well, thank you, Tamara. I appreciate that. I remember how nauseated I was. I mean, it was 2017. Katrina was long past. But by God, you could still take a New Orleans tour of the disaster areas. And, oh, look, this is where all the people died, in the lower Ninth Ward. Oh, yeah, there's right there, right here by the high. Yeah, that's where the waters were up, and people were floating face down dead in the water. It's vulgar. It is ghoulish. And it smacks of being a manifestation of titanic capitalism. The submersible, Tom in sunny San Rafael, says, seeing the news, I realized that I've seen that submersible or an identical one. I took the attached picture in 2016 at the boatyard where it was being loaded onto a truck after closing time. Toys for rich guys. Yep, there it is, the Ocean Gate Cyclops 1. Hey, I've got an idea. Let's put together a carbon fiber tube. Let's control it with literally a video game controller. And let's charge people a horse-gagging wad of money to take them somewhere and maybe see something, but more likely than not, they don't see it, and we're going to make them sign a waiver knowing they could die. The possibility of death occurs three times on the first page of the massive waiver you have to sign to get in the damn thing. Matt in San Francisco notes, billionaires below. My first thought was, a couple of billionaires? Good start. I know, I'll get my rosary. I don't know that you need one. It's like the old joke. What do you call it when 50 lawyers go over a cliff in a bus? A good start. I know all the lawyer jokes. All of them. And of course, this has turned into, and I've told this story before, but The moment that cable news came into its own was actually back when I was still at CNN and baby Jessica was down the well. Everything in the journalism world stopped. It was wall-to-wall, 24/7 coverage of a desperate race against time to save an entirely innocent infant who had fallen down an oil well in Midland, Texas. I used to have the memo that I got from Ed Turner. He was president of CEO at the time, telling us all what a fantastic job we'd done and how we had changed the face of journalism forever. And so now, every time something like this comes along, I'm reminded of that. And you get coverage like this from CNN. Rescue crews searching for a submersible with five people aboard that went missing while touring the Titanic's wreckage. They don't know that. Most of the time, it didn't get anywhere near the Titanic. Are keeping a nervous eye on the craft's dwindling oxygen supply as they navigate choppy waters in a remote area of the North Atlantic Ocean. The Coast Guard and the Royal Canadian Air Force are deploying more aircraft and vessels to aid in the search for the 21-foot vessel, which began its descent to the bottom of the ocean on Sunday morning and has just 4 days of emergency capability. The International Search and Rescue Operation is doing everything possible as part of a complex search effort, but has so far not yielded any results, U.S. Coast Guard Captain Jamie Frederick told reporters on Tuesday. With an estimated 40 hours of oxygen left, Frederick said, officials do not know whether that's enough time to rescue those on board.
I don't know the answer to that question, he said. What I will tell you is we will do everything in our power to effect a rescue.
No blame for him or for the people who are engaged in this desperate search that should never have had to happen. And now we're finding out a little bit about OceanGate. Turns out, Ralphs tells me, OceanGate refused independent inspection of the missing sub, and they fired a worker who raised safety concerns. Oh, that almost sounds like the Titanic itself. Maybe the spirits of the dead are getting... I mean, come on. Not really, but... Maybe it's the spirits of the dead of the Titanic saying, you know, leave us rest in peace. I'm not trying to be a complete bitch about this. Then there's the Daily Beast. Company behind missing Titanic sub received multiple safety warnings. OceanGate heard multiple complaints from ex-employees and industry experts about the safety of the vessel. It was a disaster waiting to happen. The owner is on the submersible. The company confirmed that. Thank you, Stephen, New York. That makes it a little bit Greek in terms of, you know, hubris. I remember long years ago when we were on the Libboat cruise, we made a port call in San Juan, Puerto Rico. When Ferg and I got off the boat, I wanted to take him aboard. I wanted him to see what a working sailing vessel looked like. And so we went aboard the Bounty. It was the same Bounty that was used in the Marlon Brando, Charles Laughton film. They used it again when Sir Anthony Hopkins and Mel Gibson remade the film, and she really sailed. And I just as an object lesson in taking him aboard her, I told my son, this is the kind of vessel your ancestors crossed the Atlantic on. Can you imagine? How would you stop vomiting for 6 weeks? Curiously, the ship that carried my Goad ancestors to Roxbury, Massachusetts, had previously been a slave ship. The owners of the shipping company came to the conclusion that it was actually better money. Because, don't worry, there were no morals or anything like that involved. It was better money to get religious lunatics to pay passage across or indenture themselves when they got there than it was to steal human beings in Africa and make the hateful middle passage. Obviously, that financial calculation was not made nearly often enough. Matt says if the Ocean Gate submersible surfaces, if they surface alive, I am not watching the Netflix movie about it. Matt. Exactly. Because somebody's already working on the script. I guarantee it. The lawyers are already working on the rights documents. They've got a script where everyone survives. They've got a script where some survives. And they've got a, not scripts, but treatment. And they've got a treatment where everybody dies. Because it's a good dollar. And, of course, they asked the President of the United States, they asked the White House, oh, President Biden is watching events closely. According to John Kirby, the National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications, earlier today. And I guess he is. Is he watching it more closely than, say, Mother Muscovy's war against the innocent people of Ukraine? I don't know. I hope not. But, of course, all you'll have to do, and don't do this, is wander over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and you will find out that it is entirely Joe Biden's fault. Oh, Irish Dave. John Barron just asked if the submersed Pakistani billionaire was a bulgar boatman. Oh, Dave. Tom in sunny San Rafael. Ocean Gate sort of reminds me of, what was it? Oh, yeah. Heaven's Gate. We got our Converse and we're off to see the comet. There's a spaceship flying behind it. Everybody castrated now? Good. Okay, put your shoes on. Here, drink your Kool-Aid. I forget, what did they poison themselves with, those Lulus? It would be nice if this led to a cogent, sane, sober discussion about whether the world really needs this kind of tourism. Are the disgustingly wealthy of this world so bored, so bereft of anything resembling the ability to enjoy more prosaic activities that they've just got to find? Well, you know, I'm sure they signed up for this because they couldn't get on a dick rocket yet. Because, of course, they did. Yeah, Ralph's echoing me. Oh, Dave. I know. For some reason or another, I'm having a hard time getting notifications from PayPal, so I have to check every so often. No, we are still at 1480 for the fundraising goal, the fundraising hole, here at the halfway mark of the program. Listen, if you want to talk about this or anything else, feel free to jump in. The stress line is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. On Skype, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. That'll get you into the program, easy as can be. In the meantime, we've got other stuff. But it's also a Tuesday, and therefore we have, yes, wait for it, a Green News Report, which I all too often don't get around to and get mad at myself when I don't. So let's do that, and then, oh, God, I got, like I said, we got stuff left over from yesterday, and some really good news. Great news.
It's Tuesday, June 20, 2023.
We're talking about the heat index reaching anywhere between 110 to 120.
Blackouts and deadly storms slam troubled Texas grid amid early heat wave. Another insurer ditches Florida as hurricane season gets underway. Plus,
what this can help doing is to make sure that we take pressure off the ocean in the face of climate change.
UN members adopt first ever treaty to protect marine life on the high seas.
All of those adventures on the high seas straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Every time it's real hot, climate change. Every time it's real cold, climate change. When it rains a lot, it's because of climate change. And you guessed it, Canada, with burning forests, 400 separate fires, is because of climate change.
Correct, Fox News. You're starting to get it. Congratulations. This is your Green News Report. Well, Desi Doyen, the summer right out of the gate is nothing but trouble already all across the nation, it seems.
Yes, unfortunately, it is. Extreme summer heat is here early. Triple-digit temperatures prompted heat advisories across much of the South over the weekend, triggering deadly tornadoes and thunderstorms that knocked out power from Oklahoma to Mississippi. In northeast Texas, a windstorm knocked out electricity to nearly 500,000 customers amid blistering heat and stifling humidity that combined pushed the heat index above 120 degrees in some areas.
And it's only June.
Yep. And it didn't help matters when a nuclear power plant was taken offline, but clean energy came to the rescue. A brand new backup battery system installed just a week prior stabilized the grid and prevented a broader blackout.
Very nice.
Plus, according to University of Houston professor Ed Hirsch,
our solar capacity has grown dramatically over the last 2 years. That's really helping us out right now.
Well, you're welcome, Texas.
The record-setting heat wave across the South is forecast to persist for several days, further straining electric grids. Mexico is also grappling with record-shattering early season heat that has disrupted its national games underway this week, with several athletes already hospitalized with heat stroke after temperatures there topped 122 degrees.
122 degrees.
Yes. In other news, Kansas, the nation's biggest producer of wheat, is bracing for the worst wheat crop in 60 years. AP reports that many farmers in Kansas are abandoning their crops due to a combination of severe, persistent drought and high fertilizer and fuel costs. Southwest Kansas is currently one of the nation's driest areas right now, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor.
Oh, when everything is dry, it's climate change, isn't it, Des?
It is. In the Atlantic Ocean, hurricane season is now underway, with Storm Brett brewing amid unprecedented hot ocean temperatures that meteorologists say are more reminiscent of early August. And right on cue, another insurance company has exited the state of Florida.
Flexit!
Farmers Insurance Group says it has stopped issuing new homeowners' property coverage in Florida, citing the high cost of reconstruction after last year's very expensive Hurricane Ian. Over the last 2 years alone, 15 insurance companies have left the Florida market.
Wow, you had warned about that years ago. And when those insurers leave the market, who takes their place? The state? Taxpayers?
Yep. But the most severe ocean heat wave on Earth right now is in the North Sea. Waters around the UK and Ireland are seeing temperatures several degrees above normal, which scientists warn poses serious threats to marine species by disrupting the marine food web and oxygen, because warmer water holds less dissolved oxygen.
Oh, and I'm sure you're going to blame that on climate change, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
But some good news. The United Nations on Monday adopted the first ever legally binding treaty to protect marine life and biodiversity in international waters, known as the high seas. The treaty allows for the creation of vast marine sanctuaries protected from destructive human activities and establishes ground rules for resource extraction, like proposed deep seabed mining. But first, it must be internally ratified by at least 60 governments to enter into force and become a legally binding instrument. Finally, in the U.S., renewable electricity has hit a major new milestone. A new analysis of federal data finds that wind and solar generated more electricity than coal, a lot more, in the first half of 2023. It's the first time ever that wind and solar have outpaced Old King coal over a full five-month stretch without factoring in hydroelectric power. Energy experts say the milestone illustrates how quickly the U.S. electricity sector is transforming despite numerous structural hurdles.
Nice. See you, Cole. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Twitters, and Mastodons at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Can you hear the death knell toll for old? Can you hear the death knell toll for old? Can you hear the death knell toll?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure Monkey Up Declantis will go right to work on that too. But isn't that lovely news? There's a clean energy future out there if we can just manage to have a future. We're not quite getting there fast enough. I mean, 2029. Remember? But back to OceanGate. Ralph serving as the Horn ad hoc OceanGate Research Department. Heaven's Gate idiots, phenobarbital. Thank you, Ralphs. Ultra Rich, Lee in New York, says, I believe they look for unique activities to be able to brag about what others cannot ever do. That makes sense. I think boredom's a part of it, too. You know, you've just got so much, there's nothing you can't do, so you have to find something that's a challenge that might nominally be, well, we're back to what you said, Lee, something no one else can do. I mean, everybody's been to Everest now. One of the dudes on the boat did a trek to the South Pole because boredom. Meanwhile, Bernadette, says, Ocean Gate, what were they thinking? Everybody knows you need two 13-year-old PC gaming controllers to navigate a used Bud Light beer can down to 13,000 feet. You're not wrong. No, no. And so the good news about coal, somewhere, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice is probably having a sad. Somewhere else, Joe to the mansion born is probably having another sad. And frankly, with news like this, people who work in the coal industry are probably scared shitless, wondering what will become of them when the company no longer, well, they don't give a damn about them now anyway. But they are necessary for the creation of holy profit. But they're probably worried about what will become of their lifestyle, their lives, when the mine shut down. But then again, that's been a forever thing with coal miners because, well, the companies really don't much care about them. See above. But other good news, and this is a biggie, and I hope you'll celebrate with me. Coming out of Arkansas, a federal judge, Judge J. Moody, having heard the case of Arkansas's ban on gender-affirming care for trans kids, found the Arkansas statute to be entirely, totally, and completely unconstitutional. And today entered a permanent injunction against the law taking effect. This is a big deal, because as we have seen time and time again, these laws are not
aimed the way they are portrayed as being aimed.
We're saving the children from genital mutilation.
No, you're not. You just want to disappear the trans kids. And then you want to come after the trans adults, too. Okay, you got us. I mean, it was proven in a leak of their own fucking emails. But, yes, a temporary injunction was put in place in May of, or in 2021, I should say. And it went up to the 8th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, and the 8th United States Circuit Court of Appeals said, fuck off. And so the temporary injunction remained in place. The trial was held. The plaintiffs put on copious amounts of evidence from virtually every medical professional organization in the United States saying gender-affirming care is exactly the right kind of care for these children. And the state of Arkansas put on evidence. Remember their wackadoodle attorney general whom John Stewart completely embarrassed? Well, I didn't know I was going to have to come here prepared for a Supreme Court brief. Really? Now, Jay Moody, who sits in the Eastern District of Arkansas, he was previously a judge for the 3rd Division of the 6th Judicial District of Arkansas. He said that it was entirely violative of the Constitution. Based on principles of both equal protection and due process. He went further, though, Judge Moody did, and this is important. He said that the Arkansas law violated the First Amendment rights of medical providers because it said they couldn't refer their patients anywhere else. In the opinion that was released today, Judge Moody said, rather than protecting children or safeguarding medical ethics, the evidence showed that the prohibited medical care improves the mental health and well-being of patients and that, by prohibiting it, the state undermined the interests it claims to be advancing. That's a very fancy way of saying they were lying sacks of shit. Now, to his credit, back in 2021, when the legislature passed this bill, the then governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, vetoed it. But as is the case in so many states, a gubernatorial veto requires only a majority of those voting to override it. And the Arkansas legislature, their pockets verily jingling with filthy money from corrupt, graft, grifter organizations that are, of course, tax-exempt, like the Family Policy Council and the Family Research Council and the Family Council for Policy Research. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Well, they overrode the veto with gusto and relish. And here's the thing. That's the eighth. This will be appealed. Make no mistake. This will be appealed to the 8th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, which sits in St. Louis. The 8th Circuit covers Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. South Dakota has a ban, pretty sure. God knows Missouri has tried. And so when the, so this will go up. And what's also important here is that Arkansas was the first one to be tried. The next state to have their medical care ban tried was, of course, Alabama's. And that trial has concluded, I do believe. And an opinion is pending. And if this opinion is of any merit, if this opinion gets its due consideration by the federal judge hearing the case in Alabama, the Alabama case will fail. Alabama sits in the 11th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. So, if the cases lose both in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals and in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, well, it then remains only for it to lose in the 5th United States Court of Appeals. To sort of complete the maggot court trifecta. Each individual state, if they lose in their relative, in their respective circuits, will then go to the Supreme Court. They will also the thing is, there won't be a split of opinions. If every circuit court of appeals that hears this upholds the trial court decision, then there's really no controversy for the maggot court, our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, to weigh in on, one would think. Again, though, I would not trust this court with the carcass of a runover skunk. But if something like the recent Alabama voting rights decision, the gerrymandering decision, is any kind of indication, some members of the Federalist Society wing of the court may be tiring of hitching their wagon to the stars that are Sammy Bad Breath Alito and, well, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas. See how this begins to coalesce? Florida's ban will be tested in a U.S. District Court in Florida. It, too, will go to the 11th Circuit. And it's, well, knock wood. Don't want to jinx anything. But I can almost see an end to this madness. And then they'll move on to another group. And one wonders who that will be. But there's hope here. There's hope that kids won't unalive themselves at the rate they presently do. Then we can start going after the firearms and see if we can at least drastically reduce the number one killer of kids in the United States of America, guns. Yeah. Darlene with a note. By chance, could Har Har, Jin Jin, and Slap Slap be that submersible? Be in that submersible? Oh, it is to dream. It is to wish. You get a cowbell for that, Darlene. Look, I'm squeamish, Darlene says, about these people. No matter who they are and what unusual things their wealth has allowed them to do, suffocating in a small tomb under the ocean, fully aware of what is happening to them. So I do hope they're found safe. I know. Considering their extreme wealth, though, they should be asked to defray at least a solid portion of the cost of the search and rescue if they make it out alive. Yes, Connecticut is usually a size comparison state for some reason. We're one of the smallest states, yet somehow huge in such comparative circumstances. I don't know why. Maybe it sounds sexy or something. You know, it probably does, Darlene. Hey, Charlene, no offense. It makes a search area the size of Connecticut somehow sounds better than a search area the size of 1,000 Rhode Islands. So there's that. As to the Arkansas law, Stephen New York says, you have forgotten the double secret hidden probation reason the judge struck down the law in Arkansas. The Arkansas legislature sucks ass. I just ask Haley. She'll tell you. They do. They're awful. It's just a maggot stump liquor cocktail party. Back to the submersible. Cynthia writes, hi, Robin. Hi, Cynthia. Just a dumb question, but don't the black boxes in airliners have pingers in them to help locate them at the bottom of the ocean when a plane goes down? Well, to be sure, there's a lot I don't know about such stuff, as I'm not the one who has to worry about it, but it seems prudent to me that submersibles should have something like that built in. And I'm sorry to say it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that thing imploded catastrophically, and this is already a recovery and not a rescue. And I also hate to say it, but that would probably be more merciful than dying slowly in the thing. To be sure, it is terrible for everyone involved, and in spite of whatever stupidity and arrogance they exhibited, I'm not without compassion. I would hate to die in that thing, sitting in the freezing dark cold without any hope of rescue. Hear, hear, Cynthia. And I guess me being me and me living where I live, that's the reason that my mind turned immediately to the hundreds, if not thousands, of coal mine disasters that have plagued Appalachia for the last, 150 years? But what a horror. All you could really do is pray for unconsciousness. And that's a lot of water to get prayers through. Of course, one witness, I guess, that was interviewed said, listen, those seas are awful right now. They're six foot seas. It's nothing but white caps. And with all the redundancy built into it to bring it to the surface in the case of catastrophic emergency, it could be bobbing on top of the ocean and no aircraft and no seagoing vessel is gonna be able to see it unless they're right on top of it. Because maybe this is a design flaw. It's the same color as a foamy wave. If only they'd painted it in you know, pride stripes. That would stand out, wouldn't it? The submersible is woke! Okay, Darlene. 1,000 Rhode Islands? You didn't get it, did you? 1,000 Island? I know, they're in New York. But yeah. LOL, Darlene says, you're underestimating the size of Rhode Island, I think. I'd say 2.5 to 3 Rhode Islands are comparable to one Connecticut. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. I'm sorry. I should not be funning. 1,000 Rhode Islands, though. Tough crowd. That's all I can say. Tough crowd. And by the way, Theo, personal bucket list in case of a lottery win. Hi, Robin. Hi, Theo. I've already got my target endowments listed, and they don't include zillionaire honey traps like taking a reportedly very sketchy submersible, not an actual submarine, there are big differences, to the deep sea floor to gawk at the site of a mass casualty event. You and the Horn are in for a healthy cut, be assured. There's just too much need in this culture to piss away wealth on rich, dumbass frivolities. Has anybody seen how much they actually paid for the tickets? Are there tickets? I mean, how much is a ride on the Dick Rocket going for these days? And was no one? I mean, the trek to the South Pole guy? Any of them? I mean, look, I don't hold it against Robert Ballard for going and finding the site. Not at all. And frankly, there's an entire subsection of maritime law for who gets the money when you discover a bunch of Spanish doubloons on the seafloor. But it does just seem macabre to want to do that. Maybe that's just me. So, other stuff. You know, good God, of course. You know that, well, let's go back to the DOJ story for a minute. The Washington Post had the story, Carol Lenig, others. Or another, and another reporter. She said that the DOJ was reluctant to investigate because the FBI had saw so many people lose their jobs, their careers, because the FBI dared to look into Nitwit Nero's canoodling with Mother Muscovy. And then, because of the barking and hooting and grunting and bleating and screeching and howling and shrieking of the maggots, they were also skeert that they'd be accused of going after the Republican Party because January 6th was a Republican event. I mean, it just was. And that had a, you know, that was one of those history doesn't rhyme, but it doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. Or maybe this is an echo of how in 2009, with Barack Obama barely into office, the DOJ completed a report on domestic terrorism in the United States that had been commissioned under the reign of dim leader in the reign of error. And so that report identified right-wing domestic terrorists as the greatest threat to the greatest domestic threat to the United States by far. And so no sooner was that done than Bill Falafel Man O'Reilly and that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, were howling on Fox News saying, they're criminalizing being a Republican. I mean, it was kind of an admission. But it served its purpose. Because the Obama administration DOJ tucked tail and ran away. It's kind of like what they did to Shirley Sherrod during the totally dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, ginned up campaign, right-wing campaign against Acorn. Running away from what is perceived to be imminent right-wing butthurt is in many instances how we got here. The report said Merrick Garland and Lisa Monaco embraced the strategy of let's do it like a mob case. Build up from the riot. Figure out if there's somebody higher and higher and higher. Hold on here. Figure out if there's somebody higher and higher and higher, and perhaps it will lead to those individuals around Donald Trump. Perhaps not. Let's let the evidence lead us up that ladder. The problem is no ladder between militia members, the Oath Keepers, and the Proud Boys wearing flak jackets and bulletproof vests and carrying bear spray and emails to Mark Meadows or Donald Trump or Rudy Giuliani about convincing state officials to help them create fake electors to swing the election for Trump and away from Biden. As it started to emerge in the summer, and especially the fall of 2022, still the DOJ sort of turned its eyes away from this until it became a drumbeat of criticism. News stories, some of them on this story and some of them in my paper, and a groundswell of concern that the January 6th committee was really without the same kind of power as the Department of Justice, uncovering stunning and worrisome and likely criminal acts. This all took place on MSNBC as she spoke with Nicole Wallace. But then eventually the January 6th hearings premiered. And that was a turning point. Because the January 6th committee embarrassed the DOJ. It's worth hearing Carol Lennig's remarks as she made them. Here we go.
Become a taboo topic at Maine Justice. Colleagues responsible for preparing briefing materials and updates for Garland and Monaco were warned to focus on foot soldiers and to avoid mentioning Trump or his close allies. The calls to investigate Trump came from inside DOJ over and over again. It took a combination, though, in the end, of public pressure, the public work of the January 6th Select Committee, and a criminal referral on the fake slates of electors to get DOJ leadership to act. And as the Washington Post notes, this delay may end up costing the department. Quote, for many months after the attack, prosecutors did not interview White House aides or other key witnesses. That's according to authorities and attorneys for some of those who have since been contacted by the special counsel. In that time, communications were put at risk of being lost or deleted and memories left to fade. Brand new blockbuster reporting that pulls the curtain all the way back on the internal divisions, debates, delays, and decisions that have resulted in DOJ waiting more than a year to investigate the Trump-directed coup plot is where we begin today with some of our favorite reporters and friends. Pulitzer Prize-winning national investigative reporter for The Washington Post and MSNBC contributor Carol Lennig is here. Her byline is on that reporting we just read from. Also joining us, former impeachment manager for Donald Trump's second impeachment, Congresswoman Madeleine Dean of Pennsylvania, and former top Justice Department official, MSNBC legal analyst, honorary co-anchor of these hours, Andrew Weissman, is back. Carol Lennig, you have been on this program at a point well into where this reporting had to have been ongoing. And so I feel like we've benefited from some of what you've been learning and your wise and sort of cautionary notes about both tempo and pace of the twin investigations now with Jack Smith at the helm. But this is the $64 million question. Where was DOJ before the dramatic public phase of the Congressional Select Committee? And I'm going to have you take us through some of the flashpoints and some of the meetings, but just give us an overview of what you learned and what you and your colleagues are reporting.
Well, first off, Nicole, I have to say it was really challenging for me on your show week after week not answer some of your questions more directly. We, of course, at the Post work hard to just talk about what we've published, not what we're about to publish. But I have to say you many times had the exact same instinct that I and my co-author Aaron Davis had throughout this experience. Where is DOJ? You know, I interviewed dozens, possibly, I would think for this story, more than 100 between the two of us. And so many people just presumed that DOJ was on the case right from the word go. But actually, the chronology is startling for how little DOJ was on the case. At first, and let's be clear about the good motives that were at work here. There was a concern about looking as though DOJ was getting partisan by going after basically the de facto head of the Republican Party. And Garland, forgive me, the Attorney General Merrick Garland and the Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco embraced this strategy of, look, let's do it like a mob case. Let's build up from the riot, figure out if there's somebody higher and higher and higher, and eventually perhaps it will lead to those individuals around Donald Trump. Perhaps not, but let's let the evidence lead us up that ladder. The problem is there is no ladder between militia members who are the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys wearing flak jackets and bulletproof vests and carrying bear spray and, you know, emails to Mark Meadows or Donald Trump or Rudy Giuliani about convincing state officials to help them create fake electors to swing the election for Trump and away from Biden. There is no connective tissue between these folks at the riot and an effort to get the Department of Justice under Donald Trump to falsely claim that there was fraud in Georgia. There's never going to be that connective tissue. And as it has started to emerge in the summer and especially the fall of 2022, still the DOJ sort of turned its eyes away from this until it became a drumbeat of criticism, news stories, some of them on this program and some of them in my paper, and a groundswell of concern that the January 6th committee was really without the same kind of power as the Department of Justice, uncovering stunning and worrisome and likely criminal acts.
I mean, you just, I think, said one of the most important things in their miscalculation, and that's that you were never going to find, right, like from step to step to step to step, all the way from the guy spraying the spray and taking Fanon's gun and beating him with it, perhaps to Trump telling him to do those things. But it was also true that Trump had clearly committed crimes in plain sight. He committed the crime of obstruction of an official proceeding. The January 6th Select Committee thinks that even with the limits to their investigative powers, he committed the crimes of insurrection. I mean, there were criminal acts that were ignored. And to that now very obvious fact, made painfully obvious by the meticulous work of the 1-6 Select Committee, what does DOJ say, Carol?
You know, DOJ has really declined to comment at all on our reporting. They've refused to give any public statement, and they've also declined to let us interview the principals who made some of these decisions. We had to do our work kind of around them. And I understand that, you know, Garland, the Attorney General, has made very clear we only speak through our court proceedings and our filings. But, you know, there have been a couple of times where the Department of Justice has spoken publicly, and now they're really not. I think what is so interesting to me, Nicole, and I know some of your panelists have some smart thoughts about this, and I want to get to them, let them give their thoughts as well. But inside the Department of Justice, there is a great division. There were prosecutors who were more than ticked off. They were disheartened about why the Department of Justice was not looking at this material. There were investigators in January and February of 2021 that were trying to get the Department of Justice to look at what they saw as a coordinated team of very, very similar fake elector slates in multiple states, and the Department of Justice declined to investigate. When they finally did, a full year and 4 months had gone by. That is the pain that was going on inside the building, where people felt that this desire to not look partisan meant they were not doing their job. They were not being allowed to look at open source material that suggested a factual, credible basis for believing a crime had been committed. That's the standard for opening an investigation. I think that another really important thing, Nicole, which you have really zeroed in on over and over again, is the January 6th committee's work. The Department of Justice has said to us, you know, in different ways, this committee didn't influence us at all, except when you interview people who are right in the thick of it, they said, look, we were embarrassed and goaded into it. It was just unbelievable how much that team, many of them, by the way, former federal prosecutors, it's amazing how much work they did in a short amount of time and what they revealed, and that pressure was so intense on the department, and the ladder up strategy was sort of cast to the rubbish bin because there was no way to continue to justify it when there was open, clear evidence of a potential crime. I have to say one more thing, forgive me for talking so long, but one more thing in the Department of Justice's, you know, in fairness to them, I've covered Merrick Garland as a judge. I know what his heart is, I think, and I know what his intentions were, and they were, this is not going to be a Donald Trump DOJ. This is going to be a Joe Biden DOJ, where nobody questions whether or not we're doing something for the right reasons. The challenge, however, is that at some point you have, and the elements of a crime that you mentioned, obstruction of government, exactly a slam dunk. It's a novel case, and it hasn't ever happened before in our country. Thank goodness for all of us as Americans, this has not happened before in our lifetimes, and maybe never again. We'll see. But that is not an easy case, and if they had begun digging into it sooner, perhaps they would come to a clearer, more calm answer. Right now, Jack Smith is racing against time to properly answer, is there a crime to be charged here?
Andrew Weissman, the problem with that, I believe everything Carol says and reports, and I accept her sort of note.
That's the final analysis, isn't it? What did she say again? Let's go back for a second.
You have, the elements of a crime that you mentioned, obstruction of government.
Yeah,
exactly.
A little further.
Sooner, perhaps they would come to a clearer, more our lifetimes, and maybe never.
There it is. There it is.
Government. Exactly. A slam dunk. It's a novel case. And it hasn't ever happened before in our country. Thank goodness for all of us as Americans. This has not happened before in our lifetimes. And maybe never again. We'll see.
Yeah, it's that maybe never again part that sort of gets on me like fire ants. Because the dithering, and I have tried to be fair, like it matters. But I have been. I've tried to be fair with regard to Merrick Garland, and you know, I think Carol Lenig is right. He wanted a functional DOJ that didn't look like it was doing the dirty business of the boss, and wasn't doing the dirty business of the boss, and that Biden wasn't driving this. You know, this is all tied in with that appearance of impropriety standard that a good judge has absolutely drilled into him. But sometimes it can get in the way of being a vigorous advocate for, lack of a better phrase, law and order. And that maybe has never happened in our lifetimes, maybe will never happen again. Well, that maybe became a smaller window because of the dithering, because of the inaction. I understand the mob, you know, the mob case the theory, but I also understand what Carol Lennig says about it not being really applicable. You know, you can't catch the guy with the dime bag who tells you who he bought the dime bag. Dime bags, really? The Youngs are out there going, "Grandpa, what's a dime bag?" Tell you later, kid. Okay, you bust the person who buys a couple of grams to get the guy who buys an ounce to part out into 28 grams. You go after the guy who buys an ounce to get the guy who bought the QP. You go after the guy who bought the QP to go after the guy who bought the pound. You go after the guy who bought the pound to get the guy who bought the bale. And eventually you work your way up, theoretically, to some drug lord somewhere. Maybe the better example would have been cocaine. You know, the gram to the eight ball to the ounce to the, well, yeah, to the brick. But she's right. It wasn't here. It was never going to be that way. And I am guilty of having seen this that way. Yeah, well, you know, you want to go after a mob, you go after a mob the way you go after the mob. But maybe sometimes you start trying to develop the case against the guy, against whoever is at the top of the point of the pyramid, while you're still dealing with the little shit birds at the base. May never happen again. May. Sure would be nice if it didn't, but because of all this foot dragging, that's not looking so damn likely now, is it? And it's a piss off. Shouldn't have been this way. And Merrick Garland has managed to put his boss in a corner. I mean, Nitwit Nero was going to scream that Biden was coming for him one way or the other. And maybe this, you know, maybe this is a counter talking point. Yeah, if Biden had wanted you, they wouldn't have dithered for a year and a half. And it really did kind of put Jack Smith in a shitty position. And Stephen New York says, mob ladder, maybe I'm trying to cover my ass. However, I also think there may have been a sense of not knowing what to do precisely because we haven't been here before. Probably. And it's the same reason when the Corps of Discovery was heading up, you know, up the Missouri River, Lewis and Clark. Well, you know, they took several barrels of beer. And they took a cask or two of whiskey. And, well, you don't necessarily know where you're going, so you take a gallon of laudanum with you, too. That's our second laudanum reference for the evening. But it's... I don't think you need to cover your ass, Steve. I think those of us who were trying to cut slack to Merrick Garland were doing so out of the best of intentions. And maybe a federal judge wasn't the guy to bring into the DOJ. Maybe Adam Schiff would have been a better attorney general. Maybe Sheldon Whitehouse would have been a better attorney general. Somebody who's actually been in the U.S. attorney's office. I don't know. Oh, and back to Ocean Gate and the submersible. Irish Dave says he founded Ocean Gate in 2009. For $250,000, the company offers people the chance to get an up-close glimpse of what remains of the doomed British ocean liner. Ocean Fate, because Watergate was taken. Well played. Well played, Dave. And Steve jumped in on that too. Titanic visits. I'm not saying these two things are the same. However, how is visiting the Titanic site different than visiting, say, Auschwitz? I don't see them as visiting a grave, but as visiting a place of historical value where people perished. By the way, tickets are $250,000. So the Pakistani GI love money dropped $500,000 to get in a tube and potentially kill himself and his kid. Did I mention Pakistani? Can you imagine what $500,000 could do properly applied in Pakistan? I never know. I say Pakistan, you know, because hillbilly. But I remember Barack Obama was at Pakistan. Okay. But that's not the way billionaire minds work, is it? Oh, and back to the story out of Arkansas. Holly Dixon is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Arkansas. She said, this decision sends a clear message. Fear-mongering and misinformation about this health care do not hold up to scrutiny. It hurts trans youth and must end. Science, medicine, and law are clear. Gender-affirming care is necessary to ensure these young Arkansans can thrive and be healthy. Here's the funny thing that I don't necessarily get. Well, maybe I do. This is merely an Arkansas law, so this decision in Arkansas affects only Arkansas. On the other hand, if some wild-eyed maniac in bumfuck Texas, who happens to be a federal judge, wants to opine on women's rights to get, say, RU486, mifepristone, the abortion pill, wow, that affects every state. Something stinks. And so this decision touches none of the 19 other states that have either restricted or outright banned gender-affirming care for minors. Federal judges have temporarily enjoined, again, Talibama's and Talibandiana's laws. Florida's ban has been temporarily enjoined. And again, I think there's a benefit to pointing out. Well, these bans were all brought by fiscally conservative Republican legislatures.
I'm a fiscal conservative.
Well, good for you. But fiscal conservative goes out the damned window if there's somebody that Republicans desperately need to hate. This is one of only multiple prongs. Only one of multiple prongs. The other is the athletics ban. Can't have 10-year-old trans girls running cross-country now, can we? 12, whatever. And governors like make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice bring the entire power of the state of West Virginia to bear on literally a kid trying to run track. Or the kids in Utah who had the entire power of the Zion curtain rung down on their necks, and there's only three or four or less. They're doing the same thing in the Buckeye State with the House there set to vote on a ban. And the thing is, this decision won't affect them. This decision won't influence them. This decision will not convince them that this is a really damn dumb thing to do. Because maggots. The civil rights struggle is instructive. How long did it take for states to at least nominally integrate their public schools after Brown versus Board of Education was decided by the Supreme Court in 1954? All deliberate speed, y'all. See what I mean? And like I said, we've got stupidity left over from yesterday. You just knew that the Juneteenth federal holiday was going to drive the maggots right up a tree. And when you want to hear maggots up a tree, where you go is, of course, hey, Steve from Georgia Stan. Hey, Todd. Where you go is, of course, C-SPAN and Washington Journal, where a maggot called in from Texas to explain the debt owed by black Americans. Oh, just listen to the idiot.
Thank you.
All right, Olivia. Dave in Texas, Republican. Hi, Dave. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate your show. It certainly enlightens me how Democrats think. I have not heard one white Democrat apologize for slavery. I haven't heard any black person say thank you to the over 300,000 white men who died to free those black slaves. I'm astonished. I realize we're focusing on slavery, but my descendants are from Scotland and Ireland.
Oh, here it comes.
We never owned slaves.
All right, there in Texas. The previous caller mentioned...
Wow, he got the hook pretty quick. Okay, so question one. You heard the slurring. Do you think Dave in Texas just had a few pops before he called? Or was he still drunk from the night before when he got up at God only knows what time it was? Or is this a meds issue? Slow, deliberate speech that somehow still manages to convey the fact that Dave's in the bag. Dave's tanked. Dave's three sheets to the wind and the clothespin's blowing off the clothesline and the sheets soon to follow. Yeah, what does he expect?
Them black people is a bunch of ingrates. They ain't thinking. I'm Scots Irish, and I never had no slave. Our people, no.
Horseshit, you didn't. Oh, please. The Scots and the Irish came over here, and particularly the Scots Irish and the Scots, and they got right busy in the slave business. Oof. If that wasn't all, because I guess Dave in Texas, it needs to be visited by, once a visit from who? Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, Representative James Clyburn. Oh, thank you. No. But that wasn't all. Some people got mad at Beyonce. Sometimes there's just no winning. She went on Instagram, Beyonce did, and said, "In honor of Juneteenth, everything I wore for Renaissance World Tour tonight was created exclusively by black designers." And somebody pointed out, and you didn't tag a single one of them. Oh, well. There's no making some people happy. Nitwit Nero is talking finally, and his defense counsel just loves this, I'm sure. About the recording of Nitwit Nero bragging about showing off highly confidential information. So, over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, yesterday.
It wasn't a document, okay? I had lots of paper. I had copies of newspaper articles. I had copies of magazines. There was no document. It was a massive amount of papers and everything else talking about Iran and other things, and it may have been held up or may not, but that was not a document. I didn't have a document per se.
Per se.
There was nothing to declassify. Those were newspaper stories, magazine stories, and articles. And I was just in a hurry. I just took things. I was just in a hurry. Like every other president, I take things out. And in my case, I took it out pretty much in a hurry. But people packed it up and we left, and I had clothing in there. I had all sorts of personal items. Because I had boxes. I wanted to go through the boxes and get all my personal things out. I just want to be president again because I want to make America great again. We were respected all over the world. Very simple.
I mean, sometimes he does seem very simple. Simon Simple, but not Simon Pure. He went on telling Brett Baer,
"It's too painful for the family. If I get back in, I'd like to be less combative, but I find the press is extremely dishonest. And if I'm not combative, I don't get my word across. If I'm not combative, excuse me, I don't know. I don't think you could win."
I added the excuse me because I know he was thinking about saying it. God. Well, this is helpful. The silly little poll at the bottom of this story, and the story came from ABC News. Do you personally believe former President Trump should or should not be criminally indicted for mishandling government secrets after leaving the White House? Of whatever this sample size was, 71% say definitely should be, 2% possibly should be. There's the maggots, 25% say definitely should not be. And that 2% of people that I can never figure out why they bother going to the trouble of answering the poll, other, No opinion. I don't think I want to meet that 2%. You know, we were talking about users of illegal drugs earlier. Sad story. Ray Lewis III, the son of Ray Lewis, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens, is dead. 28 years old. Suspected overdose. He'd played for 2 years at the University of Miami, where his daddy went. Transferred to Coastal Carolina. Finished his college career at Virginia Union. The police said the incident appears to be a tragic accident. The cop who showed up even administered naloxone, the overdose avoidance or reversal drug. It doesn't always work. And, of course, the praise. Level-headed young man who worked hard and never acted like he was above others despite his father's success as an NFL standout. A Pro Football Hall of Famer. Oh, and the New York Times with a story today. Interesting. Nitwit Nero isn't just sitting around MAGA lardass pissing and moaning. No, he's doing exactly what he continually does. He's got a real estate deal going in Oman, according to the Times. Mr. Trump's name is plastered on signs at the entrance of the project and the lobby of the Intercontinental Hotel in Muscat, the nearby capital of Oman, where a team of sales agents is invoking Mr. Trump's name to help sell luxury villas at prices up to $13 million, mostly targeting super-rich buyers from around the world, including, where else, Russia,
Iran, and India.
Mr. Trump has been selling his name to global real estate developers for more than a decade, but the Oman deal has taken his financial stake in one of the world's most strategically important and volatile regions to a new level, underscoring how his business and his politics intersect as he runs for president again amid intensifying legal and ethical troubles. The government of Oman is providing the land. And no way is he going to turn this over to...
I'll let Iwanka run it.
Mm-mm. The Times went on to say Mr. Trump's business ties in the Middle East have already been under intense scrutiny. Federal prosecutors who brought criminal charges against him in the case stemming from his mishandling of classified documents issued subpoenas for information about his foreign deals and the agreements with the Saudi-backed 54 golf tour, that's what LIV is, 54, an arrangement that triggered outrage even before the embattled proposed merger with the PGA because of the Saudi government's ties to 9/11 and the brutal murder of a Washington Post journalist, Jamal Khashoggi. Now, this couldn't possibly be all grifty. Got it? Yes, of course it could. Oh, and I mentioned we had some Josh Holland ass news. Again, stupidity from Juneteenth. Titanic level. This is a real Lulu. They cannot resist tweeting their abject stupidity. I could have saved this one for tomorrow, but it's... no, I don't want it to go stale. By the way, we're at, the fundraising hole is at $1,480. And going nowhere in a hurry. It would be great if we could get a few more simoleons into the hole. Please, if you value this program. So, to commemorate Juneteenth, Josh Holland ass, masculinity expert, tweeted yesterday,
"Today is a good day to remember. Christianity is the faith and America is the place. Slavery came to die."
Wow. Just wow. This is a guy with a Stanford, top shelf education. And, well, he knows his audience, and he knows that that'll make them, I don't know, play with themselves or something. I mean, you can start with the fact that this is not a Christian nation. The Treaty of Tripoli actually says the United States is in no wise founded upon the Christian religion. Bless her heart. And I mean that in a good way. Cori Bush, a member of the House of Representatives, also from Missouri, said, "One, today is a good day to remember America was built on the enslavement of black people. Two, our government has never even formally apologized, let alone sought to repair the harm slavery inflicted and perpetuated. So this," arrow pointing down to Josh Hawley, "is a lie." Well, of course he's a liar, Representative Bush. His fingers are typing, and he's an evangelical. End of story. Is he that dumb, or is he just that obfuscatory? Because all over the South, in the years preceding 1861, preachers were in pulpits from old Virginia to Texas, preaching things like Colossians 3:22. That's a book in the Christian New Testament. "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord." Because, see, At that point in time, the Christian church was trying to avoid the ire of Rome. And there were a lot of early Christians who were, in fact, slaves within the meaning of the word at that point in time in that situation. It was not the same as the chattel slavery of the American South. Slaves in the Roman Empire could actually earn their own money and buy their own freedom. And while we're at it, England, Russia, Spain, France, Portugal, Denmark, Sweden, South Africa, India, Ecuador, Colombia, Argentina, Venezuela, Uruguay, Mexico, and Peru all abolished slavery before the United States did, and managed not to have to fight civil wars over it. And as Michael Harriet said, America is literally where slavery came to live. Another individual pointing out Thomas Jefferson would dispute both those claims. I don't know if you could get him off Sally Hemings long enough. I mean, if slavery came here to die, it was a very long, slow death that hurt a lot of people, killed a lot of people. Thank you, Ralphs, for jumping in on the fundraising. That gets us down to $14.55. Thank you so much. Going back to Nitwit Nero, Kevin says, let's also not forget the vote in the second impeachment. Golden opportunity for the GOP to wash their hands of Trump. McConnell should have threatened to make Senate life absolutely miserable to any GOP senator who voted no on impeachment. That vote should have been 100-0. You know they're kicking themselves about it. I don't think Josh Hawley's kicking himself. I don't think Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is kicking himself about it. I don't think Tim Scott is. You may have a little more faith in Republican senators than I do. And then, well, I mentioned Tim Scott. Here he is now. Actually, a couple of days ago, the day before Juneteenth. And he is going to lick the boots and kiss the hands of people who wouldn't give him the time of day otherwise. Every marginalized group has its lick spittles. Hi, Tim.
Here's a bit of what he said on a podcast this week.
I think there is a long history of African-American or other minority candidates within the Republican Party who will validate America and say, everything's great and we can all make it.
He says it's fair to be skeptical of candidates who don't acknowledge and have a plan to address hundreds of years of racism. You've talked about your own experiences being followed by store clerks, being pulled over, even having a hard time sometimes getting into the Capitol, attesting that you are actually a senator. Do those experiences make President Obama's point?
Absolutely not. There's no higher compliment to be attacked by President Obama. Whenever the Democrats feel threatened, they drag out the former president and have him make some negative comments about someone running, hoping that their numbers go down. Here is what people need to know. The truth of my life disproves the lies of the radical left. You talk about addressing the issue of poverty. My opportunity zones have seen more than $50 billion go into the poorest, hardest hit communities in this country. The majority of them are minority. Think about the HBCU funding that In his administration, he totally missed it. We took the funding for HBCUs to the highest level in the history of the country. And then, Shannon, we made it.
We who?
And the radical left.
Him and that mouse in his pocket?
Refused to allow quality education in big blue cities. I support school choice because I support common sense. The radical left and President Obama, they have failed, they have failed, and they have failed. We will make it happen. Under my administration, we will make sure that kids have quality education in every single zip code. We'll work on Opportunity Zones 2.0 to...
As long as there's no critical race theory... My aching back. He's such... He's such a lick spittle.
Matt in San Francisco, every group has their pick spittles. Lick spittles. Let's get Caitlyn Jenner, Milo Yiannopoulos, and Tim Scott together and call them the dream team of the token party. Good Lord, yes. And there's probably a... Oh, who else? Well, there he is again. Little Benny My Dry Wife Shapiro, who gets off to trans porn. Self-hating Jew. Yeah, absolutely. That little bastard would light the fires in the oven and load the Zyklon B in the showers. They just can't help it, can they? So there's that. And then there's the man with the giant head, Charlie Kirk, who went on the air yesterday to blacksplain or whitesplain Juneteenth. Oh, dear. Get the hockey puck.
So it's Juneteenth. What exactly is going on here? Well, very few people are willing to actually call this out. From the first time that this was floated as a federal holiday, I am thankful and proud to say on this program, we opposed it. This is not about out of many one. No, it's about a certain skin color now gets their own summertime celebration, the exact same thing that happens before NFL games where they play the black national anthem. This recognition of this as a quote-unquote federal holiday comes right...
Did nobody tell the big giant head that he's free to celebrate Juneteenth too? I marked it. I find it a good holiday. I find it a good idea to proudly celebrate those moments when our country has done the right thing. God knows we could use a few more of those. Before NFL games, when they play the black national anthem. You know, there's nothing about being black in the black national anthem. The Charlie Kirks of the world, the big giant heads of the world, read the blackness into it.
Right out of the 1619 Project. Look who's most excited that this is a federal holiday. And they're not talking about this as a massive celebration. Oh, wow, look how far blacks have come. It has now become a racial complaining day. Now we have a full day to... be able to smear and slander white America. This holiday is a wedge, and I put in quotes, holiday is a wedge used to push for countless destructive policies demanded by BLM. And remember what BLM stands for, burn, loot, and murder.
Really?
Juneteenth becoming a federal holiday is a nationalized race hustle. Someone says here, Charlie, you're so clueless about Juneteenth. As an 87-year-old white woman who grew up on my father's cotton farm, we hired many black workers. You should do more research on the subject. The Declaration of Freedom was not received in Texas until June 19th. You're being disrespectful, all the blacks who endured slavery. Hold on a second. None of the blacks that are alive today endured slavery, number one. Number two, you're trying to tell me that today is really a recognition of the liberation of slaves. If that was the case...
Oops. Somebody just outed himself. The enduring legacy of our bloody history of slavery. Almost self-perpetuates. Redlining. Jim Crow. Voter suppression. Lynchings. But Charlie Kirk doesn't want anyone learning any history except the lily white history that is acceptable to maggots like him. Oh my God, Matt. Subject line, Charlie. Show me on the doll where the man touched you, Charlie. Who hurt you, Charlie? Charlie! And thank you. Thank you to Jude. With a gift, remembering her friend and co-worker, Justice. She tells me, as I said, he was killed in a car accident after our Evo retreat late last Tuesday. It was attended by 500 from all over this earth, Japan, Australia, Canada, along with many here on this fragile in this fragile country of ours. He has left a legacy that I am unable to put to words at this time. It is a reminder for all of how precious the moment at hand is. For me personally, to be present, especially as young men at work wept, was so profound, a conduit for healing. In peace, Jude. As the saying goes, may his memory be for a blessing. Well, this was truly a Titanic Tuesday. And so tomorrow, when we get going again, we'll be at 1445. Thank you, Jude. Thanks, everybody. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Great to hear from you this evening, Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Jude. Thank you, Joey. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks for the kind words to Peter and Libby. And wherever you take the podcast, please like it, follow it, subscribe to it, whatever the verbiage is. Leave a comment along the way. Thank you. Share the program on your social media. Let people know what's going on here, how special this conversation is. Thank you, Derek, for the kind words on Twitter. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. If you're eligible, get your booster. Wear your mask. If you're around the maggots, They're a spewy bunch. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. And if some guy comes hauling ass down the sidewalk talking about how America is where slavery came to die, well, avoid that. Avoid that maggot like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.